There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines, and top debate. This is The Grill with Tom Urquhart on DubaiEye 103.8.
Welcome back to the show. If you were looking forward to the smooth, dulcet tones of Tom Urquhart, then you are, unfortunately, well, you've been let down this afternoon. He is off on his summer holidays. It is myself, Chris McCarty, that is seeing you through all the way until 6pm. You are listening to The Grill, where we keep an eye on live sport and look back on all of the top stories of the week. Speaking of which, and it is Mark Archer and Sean O'Shea who join me this afternoon, one of the biggest sporting stories of the week, and it has a little political edge to it all. Imran Khan, Pakistan cricketing legend, is the new Prime Minister, or is set to be sworn in as the new Prime Minister of Pakistan, Mark Archer. We were talking about this one on Thursday evening. Manny Pacquiao, Vitaly Klitschko, George Weah over in Liberia as the Prime Minister, or President, I think it's Prime Minister of Liberia. And now we can add the name of Imran Khan.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yes, Arnold Schwarzenegger as well.
Yeah, look, it's amazing scenes in Pakistan. Congratulations to Imran Khan. Let's hope he makes a lot of difference there. Tough, tough job in politics to be the Prime Minister of Pakistan. But he probably handled the toughest job in Pakistan life and society, which has been the captain of their cricket team. Yeah. with aplomb for many years. He was a World Cup winning captain. He was a star player and probably the most influential cricketer of all time. And let's hope he can translate some of that form, some of that charisma, some of that political diplomacy and nous into the political scene. So, yeah, let's hope he does a great job as the Prime Minister of Pakistan once he's sworn in, once it's all confirmed. And let's hope also from a sporting perspective he can maybe bring about some positive change in the PCB. Maybe he can get Pakistan playing more test match cricket at home or more international cricket at home. And maybe he can thaw out the India-Pakistan relations to a degree that they're going to play more regularly. So let's hope from a sporting perspective, Imran Khan as a new Prime Minister of Pakistan has a positive influence on Pakistan cricket and also see some more regular play between that great rivalry, India and Pakistan.
Be very honest with us here, Shawnee. Are you a cricket fan?
In a word?
No.
No.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what then. Have you ever been to a cricket match?
I have actually been to a one-day international in Headingley.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
okay, so you've ticked that
ball in Pakistan. It was good, actually. I enjoyed it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Mark the date, September 19th. Yep. I will take you to Dubai Cricket Stadium, India, Pakistan. Confirmation this past week. That is the date they will be meeting for the first time since their Champions Trophy meeting, which of course saw Mohammad Amir produce that incredible spell of bowling. Pakistan won on that occasion. This the Asia Cup. First time as well, and I know we talked about this on Thursday, Arch. First time that India and Pakistan, they've met 26 times here in the United Arab Emirates, but this will be the first time that the two titans of world cricket will meet in Dubai.
Yeah, these two teams were regular competitors, particularly in Sharjah in the 70s and 80s. They played probably almost 18, 19 times there. I know they've played in more recent years, but almost a decade ago now, they've played a couple of matches in Abu Dhabi, maybe a three-match series. But most of the cricket that these two nations have played in the UAE has been in Sharjah. And if you are a big fan, a nostalgic fan of Imran Khan and cricket from the 80s, we're going to play a little clip now of Imran Khan with an amazing spell of bowling for Pakistan against India in Sharjah. Some great classic commentary here. And I don't know if you're ready to do this now, Chris.
Or we will. We will do it now. Why not? Listen, this is the man that's going to be the next Prime Minister of Pakistan.
Exactly. And what a cricketer he was. All-round talent, but an amazing bowler with the new ball and a great leader for Pakistan.
Pakistan have won the toss and have put India into bat. And it is going to be Imran from the pavilion end to face him, Ravi Shastri. And there's the first delivery to the deafening roar of approval of this packed stadium. There's an appeal for LBW and he's out! The first ball and sensations here at the Sharjah Cricket Ground. Imran traps Shastri, LBW.
That was a really quick ball, came back off the seam and caught him on the back foot.
Sirikant facing Imran. That's up in the air. He could be gone out. And yes, he's gone. Imran striking and striking hard. The world champions at the moment reeling against Imran Kamintoni.
Srikant beaten a little by the pace of that one, because as Imran ran into bowl, you could see the intention of the bowler to pull the ball down short, test him with a bouncer. And Srikant saw it quite early, went for the shot, and yet was beaten for the speed of the ball, hit high up on the bat, and it...
There's Napier for a catch behind, and he's gone! Imran has struck again. Vengsarkar caught behind, and India have lost their third wicket, and what a sensational spell. He's going to be out caught, and he's gone. Imran has struck again. Gavaskar out, caught behind, playing away from his body, and India have lost their fourth wicket, and Imran
to Amarnath.
He's out, fifth wicket gone. Amarnath bowled, and India are in real trouble. 5 down for 34, and Imran has taken his fifth wicket.
That ball didn't do a great deal. I think he was beaten by pace. Came back a little bit, went through the gate, but it was pace more than movement. There was a certain amount of movement, but he was playing well away from the body.
Madan Lal to face Imran. He could be out caught, and he's gone. A great, magnificent catch by the wicketkeeper. What a tremendous catch by Ashraf. One of the finest catches perhaps one can hope to see. And Imran has struck again to get his sixth wicket. And Madan Lal is out. What a superb catch, Mansoor.
Wasn't it? Watch it now. It's a bit wide. He goes for the slash. And right at the fingertips. Full stretch.
So it's 9 wickets down for 121. Imran has taken 6, and this is the best performance by a Pakistani in one-day cricket, beating 5 for 21 by Wasim Akram in Australia.
Some fantastic memories there. Imran Khan, what a cricketer he was. That is a little tribute there to the man that will, by all intents and purposes, be announced as the Pakistan's new Prime Minister. So he's moving from the cricketing field into the political sphere as well. What a cricketer he was. All-rounder, the man that guided, led Pakistan to their only World Cup success back in 1992. And he now arguably faces the toughest task of his career, really. And that is uniting Pakistan. A lot of texts coming in. A lot of you on 4001 asking where tickets will be sold for the India versus Pakistan game. We're chasing that up, but I would imagine down at Dubai Sports City would be your best place to pick up tickets. Whether they're on sale or not, we will confirm for you at this moment in time. September 19th is the date. My feeling would be that the tickets are not yet for sale, but we will do some digging for you. It will be a packed house. There will be not a ticket spare for love nor money. We know how much the Indians and the Pakistanis, and it's a great opportunity. I was saying there to Sean off air that it's just a wonderful opportunity. It's not often you get to see these two teams face off because of obviously well-documented problems.
They only tend to play now, these teams, in ICC events like World Cups or T20 competitions. They don't tend to play any bilateral cricket because of obviously the political situation between the two nations. So this is a chance. This is the Asian Cup. It's a chance to see these two teams lock horns, big stars there. Lots. I think the last time they played was the T20 final, wasn't it?
It was the Champions Trophy final
that Pakistan won. So India will be looking for some revenge. We just talked about those amazing highlights from Imran Khan taking 6 for 14 in Sharjah. That was back in 1985, Chris.
Wow, I wasn't even born.
So we'll see some wonderful cricket, India-Pakistan, September the 19th.
It is September the 19th. That is when they will face off in the Asia Cup, and I'm thoroughly, thoroughly looking forward to it as well. I'm hoping to bag one of those tickets. It will be an absolute riotous carnival atmosphere down there. And Shawnee, I promise you,
I'm coming,
you're coming with us.
I'll be there. I will be there.
You will be. Irfan's been in touch. Fantastic to see Imran Khan in the news. Mark my words, he's even better leader than cricketer. So Irfan, clearly a fan of Imran Khan. Do let us know if you are as well and whether you think he will be a success as a politician. Better him than me. I always do wonder, and you've got to take your hat off to individuals who achieve so much in the sporting realm that they deem it necessary. I guess that's perhaps the wrong turn of phrase to use, that they feel so passionate about their country that they want to move into political life, because we know it comes with an awful lot of responsibility, an awful lot of baggage. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, I mean, I get a sore head just thinking about moving into politics, certainly over in the UK right now with Brexit and all the nonsense that's going on. So good on Imran Khan for stepping up.
Yeah, fantastic. Look, he's given a lot of his time since retiring as a cricketer to charities, to raising money, to fighting good causes. He raised a lot of money recently for the only cancer hospital in Pakistan, I think in Karachi.
So yeah, it's free help for individuals that perhaps can't afford it, which is, it goes without saying, doesn't need me to say what an incredible move that was from Imran Khan. So he's certainly done an awful lot for the country. And again, you've said it there, I think a little tongue-in-cheek, Mark Archer, that this is the second most important job after the role of Pakistan cricket captain. But what a task he's got on his hands now. And of course, with it being not a majority, he's going to bring smaller parties. It will be a coalition party over there in Pakistan. The hard work's only beginning now.
I guess in some ways it's like captaining a cricket team, particularly in Pakistan, where you've got so many different factions, different rivalries. Yeah. You've got to bring together some different parties, some different personalities, and gel them into a team to unite and run the country. And that's what he's going to have to do as a cricket captain. That's what he'll have to do as the prime minister. So if any man can do it, let's hope that Imran Khan can, and let's hope he can just take Pakistan to where they should be in world cricket.
When we talk about all-time 11s in the world of cricket, would Imran Khan be close?
Oh, he would be up there maybe as a captain. Look, we'd have to go through that debate, wouldn't he?
But I'm just asking.
Extremely talented. Probably not in your. He would definitely make your team of best all-rounders ever. You know, best guys of
who
bowling.
Who would get the nod for best all-rounder in your starting 11, a dream 11? Jack Callis,
but was more of a batsman than bowled.
Tendulkar.
Tendulkar would be in there, not as an all-rounder. He would be in as our three. He would come in at three.
Yeah, Tendulkar would probably bat three or four for you in that lineup.
Lara?
Best all-rounders. Oh, I'd have to have a little thing. No, Lara never bowled.
No, I'm talking, well, I'm now building my dream team. I'm not talking about all-rounders. You're talking about all-rounders. I'm now talking about an 11, a starting 11. Let's open that one up because we're getting a lot of texts from cricketing fans. You're 11. I want your all-time cricketing 11. And does Imran Khan make it? 4001. Mark Archer's furiously scribbling down now. Who's opening batsman would be? Opening batsman would be Bradman.
Don Bradman, did Don open the batting? I think he batted three.
Well, Tendulkar's in, so we've got to move someone around. Maybe open the batting. Tendulkar can open the batting.
If you want to. Tendulkar didn't open the batting in Test cricket.
No, I know.
Sir Ian Botham has to be in there, surely.
Well, he's a great shout for your all-rounder.
Yep.
4001. We've opened a can of worms on this particular subject.
Makram was an all-rounder as well?
What was he? Would be in there. Glenn McGrath would be in there. Shane Warne would be in there. Murali would be in there. We'll get on this. Your suggestions welcome. I'm thinking now as well, this could span into a Sports Tonight later in the week as well. Your starting 11 dream cricketing side, 4001. Send us your suggestions. It's a Saturday afternoon. We're going rogue. When we come back, we'll continue to keep you up to date with what's going on. The Tour de France Stage 20, the penultimate stage, is ongoing. The Hungarian Grand Prix, we're hurtling towards qualifying. There's the Porsche European Open in the world of golf that I'm sure Robbie Greenfield is tuned into as we speak. All of that, much more to come between now and 6 o'clock. Stay tuned.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are going to be shining the spotlight on local rugby after 4:30. The boys from Dubai Sharks will be joining us to just paint the picture of what has been going on in the off-season. Before all of that, though, still plenty to keep you bang up to date with. Let's give you some live scores on the doors if we can. Let's start with the football. I appreciate this is only a friendly. We're not getting too excited about it, but it is football and we're getting excited about that. It is Arsenal taking on Paris Saint-Germain and in the International Champions Cup. Sean O'Shea?
About 3 minutes to half time. Arsenal still winning 1-0, and apart from a couple of slight scares, Arsenal have been dominant, very good, and looked very solid at the back.
Unai Emery, yay or nay? Do you think he'll be a success in the Premier League?
I hope he is, because you know, we had when Ferguson left United and then Moyes came in, and
oh yes,
you know all about that, don't you, Christopher?
Indeed.
I would like, you know, Arsenal have been a great side in the Premier League, and what Wenger did was fantastic. And I would like to see Arsenal do well. And I hope he does. Like, it's a new manager coming into the Premier League, and I think it would be good for him to be. Oh, it'd be nice for him to be successful, obviously. But I'm not sure. Like, was he that successful at PSG? Would you say? Would you say it was a good tenure for him at PSG?
He won the treble in his final season. I think you've got to go back to the previous season. His first in charge, they lost the league to AS Monaco. Take nothing away from Monaco, but with the riches and the embarrassment of riches that he did have at PSG, you would expect the bare minimum is to win titles and win cups in France. Yeah. Laurent Blanc before him did that. Carlo Ancelotti did that. So he's not reinvented the wheel by having success. And I'm not downplaying the you've still got to go out and do it. And of course, in that regard, he's done it.
Arsenal? What's your aspiration? Get back in the top four?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's gotta be, you ask Arsenal fans, they want a...
Get back in the Champions League. Yeah. I mean, that is success, which isn't really a success.
Well, it's the very reason that Arsene Wenger lost his job, because they weren't happy with finishing fourth and winning Emirates FA Cup.
Well, they didn't finish fourth. They finished sixth or fifth. They're not even close to being in the top four.
Yeah. Last season was a particularly poor one, hence why Arsene Wenger was pushed out the door at that football club. But Unai Emery moving forward, and again, Arsenal fans, let us know, 4001. Speaking to the ones that I know have said, it's just about progress. So finishing top four and getting back into Champions League football is success in this new season under a new manager. Winning a cup is always a bonus as well. And then from there, they can start building. Because let's be frank, and I don't think there's many Arsenal fans out there that would think that their side is capable of seriously challenging for the Premier League title. As good as Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan and Ozil, our front three is, I don't think Arsenal are well equipped to push seriously. They might start well, and I know they've got a couple of humdingers. They start at home to Manchester City, the second weekend of the Premier League season, they're away to Chelsea. So it's a brutal start to the campaign, but they are one of the few big teams, quote unquote, who have had all their big players in and around. There's not many who were on World Cup duty.
You know, that will stand them in good stead. You know, you look at City, you look at United,
Tottenham.
You know, they're missing players, and that will affect their form, you know, in the start of the season. Unless you've got, like, City, not too much, because I think they've got such strength in depth that they'll probably manage that okay. But I think United and Tottenham could struggle to find rhythm the first five or six games, just while those players come back in and get some kind of fitness in.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
If they start well, and if Emery is a good coach and gets them playing decent football and they firm up at the back, you know, if they get a good run first five or six games, there's no reason why they can't have a good season. I agree with you. I don't think they can win the league.
No, I don't.
But like you say, it's just about progress. Get back in the Champions League, get back in the top four, and then go from there, really.
Absolutely.
So they just need to give them the time, don't they?
Yeah, and in Aubameyang, and I'm expecting big things. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, he's had the summer off in pre-season, albeit they've been up against substandard opposition, far below the standards that they will face in the Premier League next season. He's looked very sharp. I'm expecting big things from the Gabon international. So that's updating you on the International Champions Cup. Arsenal lead then PSG. What about the Tour de France? It is stage 20. The leader, Geraint Thomas, we're expecting him out just after 6:30?
Yeah, around 6:30 UAE time. I can tell you that the time trial has started, and the fastest time so far, which should give us an indication of how quickly these guys are going. It's a 31-kilometre time trial. Fastest time so far is 42 minutes.
Ooh.
But there is, between first and fifth, and it's only just started, there's a two-minute gap. So there is a chance to if you're a time trial specialist or have got some serious legs, some serious wheels, so to speak, you have a chance to make some ground here. But Geraint Thomas has a 2-minute and 5-second lead over the Dutchman Tom Dumoulin, who's another 20 seconds ahead of the Slovakian Primož Roglič. Chris Froome back and forth. But it's expected that Chris Froome has the time trial experience to get back into that podium of third. He's expected to do that today. But really, it's a two-horse race for the yellow jersey for the Tour de France. Geraint Thomas, Team Sky, looking to become the third Briton to win a Tour de France, of course, after Sir Bradley Wiggins, after Chris Froome, who's won four. Can the Welshman do it? Can he hold on to a 2-minute and 5-second lead in today's 20th and penultimate final stage? Pretty much the final stage, because we know down the Arc de Triomphe, it's a processionary stage.
Absolutely.
They'll be drinking champagne as they enter the Champs-Élysées, etc. Oh, they do. That's what they do.
Oh, do
you not know that? They get poured a drink as they go down the final thing for the man in the yellow jersey. So
knowledge.
It's all about today. Can the Welshman hold on to just a 2-minute and 5-second lead? He'll be underway at around 6:30 UAE time.
I'll give you a quick update as well. The Hungarian Grand Prix qualifying getting underway in about 33 minutes, to be perfectly frank and exact with all of that. That will get underway, and we will keep an eye on that from 5 until 6 before we clock off. But in final practice 3, Sebastian Vettel looking to bounce back from his disappointing German Grand Prix last weekend. That saw him crash out on lap 52 when he was leading. He had an 8-point lead in the driver's standings. He is now 17 points behind Lewis Hamilton, but he is leading in final practice. He is quickest ahead of Valtteri Bottas in the Mercedes. Then comes Kimi Raikkonen in the second Ferrari. Lewis Hamilton, the 4-time world champion in Formula 1, the leader this time around. He is 4th quickest. Then comes the two Red Bulls of Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen, respectively. So it is, as we can imagine, the three big ones, Ferrari, Mercedes and Red Bull, as it has been for much of this season thus far. They lead the way, but it's Sebastian Vettel who was quickest in final practice. As I say, qualifying gets underway from 5 p.m. What about the golf? We haven't spoken much about the golf. This time last week, we were enthralled on moving Saturday of the 147th Open Championship. That would eventually be won by Francesco Molinari, and the European Tour roadshow, that is headed for Hamburg.
Yes, it's the Porsche European Open over in Germany. I can tell you, into round 3 Saturday, it's a 3-way tie for the lead. The leaders have all played 5 holes. It's Matthias Schwab from Austria, Richard McAvoy, and the American who was the overnight leader, Bryson DeChambeau, the scientist known to many. He was 10 under par overnight, and that's currently the lead. So Matthias Schwab, Richard McIlroy, both under 1 under par for today. Bryson DeChambeau is level par for his round. So the leaders at 10 under par, one shot back to the American Patrick Reed. So that's what's happening. We'll bring you bang up to date throughout the afternoon with the European Open. I'll give you a quick update from the PGA Tour. It's the Canadian Open over in Ontario. Good to see many of the players who played at the Open Championship at Carnoustie hopped on their jets, flew over to Canada, and have teed it up at the Canadian Open. Second round leaderboard. The leader is the American, Kevin Tway, of course, son of Bob Tway, who won the Canadian Open in 2003, Chris.
Wow.
He is overnight leader at 13 under par, rounds of 66 and 65 for Kevin Tway. He's a one-shot lead from Wee Kim from South Korea and Keegan Bradley, both at 12 under par. Notable others in contention, Dustin Johnson, the world number one. Well, he missed the cut in Carnoustie, but he's in contention, 3 shots back at 10 under par. Ian Poulter also won to do pretty well at the Open Championship. He's at 9 under par. Shane Lowry, the Irishman, 7 under par. And Tommy Fleetwood, another man who had a very good Open Championship. He's knocking on the door now of winning a major at some stage. He's 7 under par. A couple of big name players missed the cut though. Sergio Garcia, who missed the cut also at Carnoustie, who won it back in 2007. He missed the cut. Kevin Kisner, who had a pretty good Open Championship, he missed the cut. The South African Retief Goosen and Mike Weir, remember him, 2003 Masters champion, the Canadian, 48 years old. He also missed the cut in his home event there. So Kevin Tway leads in the Canadian Open, and it's a 3-way tie for lead in the Porsche European Open.
Over a text in, Shawnee, one of our listeners not happy with your critique of Arsenal. That is not a good reason to downgrade Arsenal for the title race. Anyone can be a great contender as long as they keep focused and consistent and be consistent. Leicester City have done it. I do take that on board. Will Arsenal be champions at the end of this coming season? No, I don't think they will be.
It's a good.
Things have happened.
Yeah,
but no.
I mean, I think Leicester was definitely a one-off. I think that was.
Oh, what a story!
That was it.
That remains the greatest sporting story ever.
I think so. Yeah, yeah. Apart from Huddersfield getting promoted to the Premier League, but no, I think he's got a point. But I just think that the other teams were so poor that season when Leicester won the league, and
it was
not take anything
storm.
Away from Leicester. But I just don't see. You look at Arsenal's squad at the minute. I just don't see them. New manager and new players coming, I just don't see them as strong as the title contenders.
I think you look around, right, and I appreciate, and maybe the no name on the text, but perhaps they are right to point out that after a World Cup, maybe there will be a little storm. The fact that a lot of the clubs are I guess, going to start the season without a lot of their first team regulars, that might give Arsenal an opportunity. And we talk so often, don't we, about momentum, and once you gain in confidence and once you get on a roll like Leicester a few years back, we all thought, no, this will come to an end, and they just rode that crest of the wave all the way to the title. So yes, on paper we can't rule Arsenal out, but
Arsenal's big advantage this season is they probably didn't have as many players at the World Cup
as
some of the big teams. We talked, I think City had 16 players at the World Cup, United had 12, I think Spurs had 12, Chelsea probably had almost the same amount, whereas I off the top of my head I probably can't count the number of Arsenal players. It's probably more like 4, 5 or 6.
Ozil being the big one. But of course, he's now back and he's been integrated back in. Torreira, the Uruguayan new signing from Sampdoria.
All those players, A, they're not going to really get an off-season. They haven't really gone on pre-season tours. Some of them are just coming back now. I think David De Gea, for one, have just come back. Some of the players that went to the deep stages of the World Cup, semi-finals and finals, they're still on holiday. Mm. And the season starts in 2 weeks. Yeah. So you can see that there's a massive advantage for someone like Arsenal to get off to a strong start. If they don't get off to a strong start, you know those teams are going to get better.
Yeah, that would be my argument. And with you, Shawnee, as well, look around at the squads. Arsenal probably still fifth or sixth best in terms of what the other teams have at their disposal. Keep your thoughts coming in, though. Always welcome. Always like to join the conversation and join the debate. You can do so on 4001. When we come back, though, we're talking all things local rugby. Fantastic little tale to tell you about regarding the Dubai Sharks. Yes, it's the off-season, but exciting times for that rugby team. We're speaking to some of their boys when we come back. Stay tuned.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to The Grill. You are listening to myself, Chris McCarty, joined this afternoon by Mark Archer and Sean O'Shea. We are keeping you bang up to date with all the live sports. Speaking of which, let's give you a live update. Well, not so much a live update. It was a result from earlier on in the Super Rugby. One semi-final down, one to go. And we've got, yes, another Kiwi team in the final. Sorry, Mark Archer. Got to turn you up first. Sorry, mate.
The Crusaders march on to a home semi-final next Saturday. They got past the Hurricanes early day, 30 points to 12. Too composed, too clinical, too classy, too many all-black forwards, and they really strangled the life out of the Hurricanes. Richie Mwanga, heir apparent to Bowden Barrett, he was the man of the match. He scored a try, kicked some valuable points, but the Crusaders too strong, 4-2. Farewell to the Hurricanes captain, Brad Shields, where he's off to ply his trade for Wasps. Probably be a star for Eddie Jones' England as well.
Absolutely.
Can't make the All Black best 30 players. So that's interesting to see there. The second semi-final tonight, Emirates Park, Johannesburg, where the Lions will take on the Waratahs. Whoever wins that, Chris, has got a tough job because they've got to travel down under to the South Island of New Zealand, go to Christchurch. It's midwinter there. It's not quite the same up in the altitude at Johannesburg. So Crusaders, 8-time Super Rugby champions, will be looking to add a 9th title next Saturday. It'll be 11:30 UAE time in Christchurch. They'll take on the winners of the Lions and the Waratahs. That match gets underway in about 30 minutes.
And it's fair to say you're expecting a victory for the Lions over at altitude.
I think the Lions at home will be too strong. It's a tough ask going all the way from Sydney to Johannesburg. The Waratahs have been inconsistent as well in the last couple of weeks. They did come back from a pretty big deficit. I think they were down almost 18 points against the Highlanders last Saturday. Great comeback in the second half. Look, they've got some classy backs, the likes of Kirtley Beale, Israel Folau. Talented players, but I think the Lions at altitude will have the right game plan, and I think 80 minutes football at altitude will be too strong.
Absolutely, and in the case of the Crusaders as well, unbeaten at home this season, and they've just now clocked up their 14th consecutive victory. They're going to take some stopping next weekend in the final. We're sticking with rugby for the next half hour or so, because I'm delighted to say that we've been joined in our humble abode this afternoon. It's not often that we get some guests on the grill, certainly not when we're in studio either, but delighted to say that three fine gentlemen have popped in to say hello this afternoon, and we're talking local rugby in particular, because there's an awful lot going on. Delighted to say that joining us, Mike Quinn, Dubai Sharks chairman. Mike, a very good afternoon to you, my friend.
Afternoon.
Great to have you with us. Alongside Mike is Matt Lobshire. He is the Dubai Sharks head coach. I will say a very good afternoon to you, Matt.
Afternoon.
Great to have you with us. And a good friend of mine, it is great to have Greg Holmes, head of sports development for Global Sports Management and Events Group. That is a heck of a title, Greg Holmes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a long one. I was trying to shorten it as well. It's great to be back on the show, guys.
It's great to have you with us. And we are talking all things rugby because I think it's important we do so, certainly in the case of Dubai Sharks. And I'm looking at you here, Mike, because an exciting new, I guess, chapter in the career and in the life of Dubai Sharks, because you've got now a new home and a nice new home to bounce into a nice new season with.
It certainly is. It's a very nice new home that we've got down at Maidan. It's very exciting, the work that we're doing at the moment with GSMEG. It's just going to put us into a different position going forward as the Dubai Sharks. As you say, it's a completely new chapter for us.
It certainly is a new chapter. Exciting times. And let's bring Matt into the conversation. Matt, you are the head coach. I appreciate the weather is such. It's an off-season. But this new move into this new home down at Maidan, the Sports Zone, exciting times for the club. What about you as the head coach, though, with your players? Will this, I guess, lend itself to you guys hopefully getting success on the pitch in the new season?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a couple of things that we're working on at the moment. Obviously, as Mike said, we've got the facilities and we're looking at that. But we're also looking at the strategic relationship with GSMEG. And that's opening all sorts of doors for us. There's the training facilities that we can access. We're currently with our training, we've actually moved it indoors. So we're doing conditioning at the moment. So although we've had a couple of guys nearly faint and heart attacks, we haven't had anybody dying from sweat yet. And what we're doing with that is we're working with GSMEG to actually start instituting better protocols, I guess, around our training. So we're recording all the training at the moment. We're using the GSMEG facilities in Cape Town to actually comment on that. We're going to take that into the season in terms of analyzing the game and our game plan. So we've definitely taken a couple of steps up in terms of how we approached last year. I mean, last year, this time, we were training in Zabil Park, trying to avoid
any heart
families and heart attacks and all sorts of other things that were going on there. So, yeah, just a completely different perspective on the club at the moment. So really starting to move into this, you know, what GSMEG may give us, which is a very good platform to look at rugby in a more analytical way and then take that onto the field, yeah.
Mike, I think it's fair to say that it's been some challenging times for club rugby in the UAE. In the last couple of seasons, we've seen issues with teams having to forfeit games between the first and second team. We've seen some issues with grounds in the UAE. We've obviously seen player movements always a factor. What good a shape are the Sharks and how confident are you going into the new season?
You are right. It's difficult times for a lot of the rugby clubs here in the, particularly here in Dubai. There's a number of factors which sort of make life difficult for us. One is access to rugby pitches in the centre of the city is also very, very key. That helps with player retention, which is always a problem for us, particularly conference teams. The migration to Premiership clubs is always a concern. One of the biggest problems we have, and I think outside of one or two of the larger clubs, is always having sponsors and the cash to be able to fund the pitch hire, the training that we need, the equipment we need for our players. There's a whole pile of factors which make it very, very difficult for us to survive here.
And just talk to us about those factors. I mean, we saw last summer, it was the Wasps, unfortunately, went to the wall, didn't they? They couldn't afford, because the facilities, it costs an awful lot of money to rent out these pitches and these facilities. And I guess that in part is why you guys have made the move now to a brand new home. It clearly makes sense for you guys moving forward. But in general, the health of rugby in this country, are we heading in the right direction, Mike, in your opinion? Probably got to be diplomatic about it, I appreciate. But, speaking to people out there and people that I know, friends of mine who play week in and week out for different teams, not necessarily the Sharks, they say that, you know, it's a taxing for them from my financial, you know, financial commitment from them as well. It's an awful lot.
It is. Look, the rugby, it's more of a, for us, it's more of a community sport.
Absolutely.
The teams that play and the clubs that play in the Premiership will find it extremely difficult from a cost perspective. You just mentioned the Wasps folding. You know, they had a great period of time where they had some fantastic sponsors, some fantastic cash. Playing in the Premiership means you also play in the West Asia Premiership. Yeah. And that's a commitment on the player's pocket to fly once or twice a month to other parts of the GCC. So it is an extremely expensive sport here, and particularly at the level that we play. And if you look at that level as we would across the rest of the world, we're probably sort of level 7, level 6. So most other teams at that sort of level across the world wouldn't be doing that sort of travelling, so it wouldn't cost as much.
What about you, Matt? What about the talent pool available? You've already touched on it, Archie. It is transient. We know a lot of people come here for work and then move. Not so much quickly, not so much perhaps as it once was. We're now seeing a lot more people spend a lot more time building lives here. What about the talent pool in general? Is it as deep as perhaps it once was?
There's definitely a talent pool here. It's maybe not as deep as we'd like it to be, especially when you're trying to populate all the clubs that are currently in play at the moment and the amount of teams that have to be fielded every week. The challenge is it's always going to be transient. You know, we've had a couple of lads leave at the end of last season purely because they're moving home.
Yeah.
No other reason than moving on or anything else. So we're always going to have those challenges. You know, guys are traveling for work, et cetera. And, you know, they come here to work. So that takes precedence in many instances. So I think the challenge is how you create a community environment where people are part of that community. And then you can start to bring players through. So you're bringing the 18, 19-year-old guys through, you know, and they're setting up lives here. They are part of the club, et cetera. And it's trying to tackle it from all of those perspectives. You know, firstly, for us, the season is going to be, you know, recouping our player base, getting a couple more guys in. That's all looking pretty good at the moment. But then I think longer term, if we want to be here in the next 5 to 7 years, it has to be this pathway that we start to create. And, you know, very fortunately, we're working with the G-Smirks of the world to actually start to look at that. And I was down in Cape Town probably about a month ago speaking to the Western Province Academy. So we're starting to look at how we can, you know, whoever isn't cracking it down in Western Province can start to come and play here with us. So, you know, we start to look at different ways that we can maintain a player base. And also a way of playing rugby and grow that community. And I think as long as we can do that from a player's perspective, a rugby perspective, and then back that up with the commercial side, then yeah, there's lots of opportunity.
And I appreciate there's a lot of fantastic work being done across all sports at a grassroots level. I'm going to sound a little biased here. And I think Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens has a big say on this because they showcase the work that has been done at grassroots level. But rugby is right at the very top. I know there's numerous football academies. I know there's 50 plus, 60 plus here in Dubai, but it's the rugby, the amount of kids on a Friday morning, whether it be the Sharks, whether it be the Exiles, wherever, playing rugby can only be a good thing moving forward. And you've said it right there, Matt. It's about the pathways. And we are still very much in our formative stage as a country, as the United Arab Emirates, but getting those foundations, putting the grassroots systems in place, and rugby is doing it. You make a good point there. Probably better than anyone.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's lots of youth rugby going on at the moment. You know, it's definitely one of our key focuses in line with the stuff that's going on with G-Smirk. So, again, your community base is very big. You have that support. You know, and I think it's also the softer things. It's, you know, if you have a community that's coming out to support the team every week, then people are going to be interested in playing every week. And they're going to be interested in seeing their sons and their, you know, brothers and fathers playing. So, you know, we focus, trying to focus on all those aspects, not just, you know, there are the technical pathways and we like to grow and we want to see those players come through. And hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more of that. You know, we'll have players coming from our growth down to Western Province, for example, and maybe playing a season there or vice versa. Yeah. So, you know, there's that side. But I think most importantly, I think that's what's great about Sharks rugby, frankly, is that we're looking at this whole scenario with Maidan as a community scenario. And that can only go from strength to strength.
And what has been the reaction in the marketplace, Mike? I would imagine that there are, like anything, it's a small, we always say Dubai, it is a huge multicultural city, but at times it's a village, people talk. I'm sure that the buzz is in the marketplace around the rugby community with this move down to Maidan.
Extremely positive. The amount of phone calls and messages I've been getting from both ex-members, new inquiries from new players to the country that want to come down and join us. It's fun to be able to be based at Maidan, which is pretty central to most of Dubai. Yeah. It's a great draw and people want to come down and be part of what we're doing. We're talking about a community that we're not just going to be doing rugby down at Maidan. There's going to be hockey. There's going to be small-sided soccer. We're going to have netball down there. We're going to involve the Gaelic football and hurling. So they're going to be involved. So it's going to be much part of a much wider community than just rugby. We're going to be the focus, but it's going to be far wider than that.
Yeah, you're going to be a facility to be able to be used by everyone, despite the passion, whether it is rugby, you've said there, netball, etc. We're going to be finding a lot more about that when we come back. Greg Holmes is alongside us. He's been listening intently to all of that. He is the man that is helping, I guess, map out this brave new vision down there at Maidan. We're finding out more about that. If you've got a question for any of the guys, and already the questions are coming in, interestingly enough, on 4001, get them in. The boys are with us for the next 15 minutes or so. Great to have them in with us, and we'll find out a lot more what is going on down in Maidan and how they're helping grow sport at the grassroots level here in the UAE. Stay tuned.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to the show. It is The Grill. We're not down at Barasti as we usually are on a Saturday afternoon. Technical issues ensure that we are in our studios this evening, and just as well, because we've got a full itinerary of guests in with us. Mark Archer alongside myself, Chris McCarty. Sean O'Shea is with me as well. He's keeping an eye on the football. For now, though, we're talking all things rugby. Delighted to be joined in the studio by Mike Quinn. He is the chairman of Dubai Sharks. Matt Lobshire as well, Dubai Sharks head coach. And Greg Holmes with the best title ever, head of sports development for Global Sports Management and Events Group. We're talking to the Shark Boys because a new chapter has been inked in their history and in their you've moved, you've got a new home down at Maidan, and I want to bring you into the conversation if I can, Greg, because it is a new dawn, a new chapter. We've discussed that about Dubai Sharks. It's also a new chapter for Maidan as well. Talk to us a little bit more about what is exactly going on down there.
Yeah, so, you know, the guys have touched on it already, and it's just been great now to be working with the Sharks. This is something we've been working on for over a year now. So it's, you know, it's great news that we've actually relocated them. So the sports zone is now open at Maidan. We're now in the process of building the pitches.
Yep.
Ground's been broken there. So our concept really is to create, you know, a multi-sport community sports centre here in Dubai, where anyone is welcome. We have a social membership, we have family memberships, we have single memberships. So we've got a clubhouse, which is now the Sharks Clubhouse, which is located in the boathouse downstairs below the cube. We have daily memberships, so if someone wants to come along and just visit and see what's going on, we have daily memberships. We have annual memberships, which will then be connected with One City card as well, so you get all the benefits across Dubai. Okay, so thankfully we've joined up with them. We will have on site a rugby pitch, mm-hmm. we'll have a football pitch, we'll have a hockey pitch, and we'll have a netball facility, as well as in the future we will have a covered training centre as well. And our idea is really to, like with the Sharks and other clubs, is to actually give a home to the local sports community, where whether it's a football club, rugby club, a cricket club, tennis
hockey.
Hockey club, they can come here, use it, they have a social aspect, they have a family aspect. And I think one of the big things from GSMEG that we really focus on is the cradle to career opportunity and working with grassroots. And it's very difficult to create a grassroots element when you don't have a permanent facility. You know, if you're just using facility here, facility there, it's very difficult to attract families and kids. And, you know, we work very much on the fact that you need participation and you need to hold on to that participation.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and we kind of feel here across the region, really, and it happens in other countries around the world, that you're tending to fill a bath with a plug out. Yeah. So you have all these, you have all these, you know, these camps and you get kids in and you lose them. They don't stay. And our aim is to get kids involved, pass them on to the likes of the Sharks, you know, and to other clubs, you know, with other sports, and make sure we hold on to them and let them enjoy sport. You know, not everyone's going to become a professional, but we want kids for lifestyle as well, to grow up healthy, playing sport and enjoying sport, and get the families involved.
And it comes back to that word community, right? I guess what the one of the aspects of this and one of the aims is to foster that community spirit. So whether you've got the Sharks in as your rugby team, the hockey team comes in, the football team comes in, they'll all be sharing the same facilities, but it creates that community. And again, one of the other things we've discussed here, it's about striving for excellence,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
We've been talking about it, Mark Archer, you know, we've said this, and one of the questions that I'd be quite keen to get your thoughts on, boys, is that we've put such an emphasis on bringing world-class sporting events here, and you've got to say, you tick them off, the golfing events, the rugby events, we've discussed the tennis events, so many wonderful sporting events. Almost now, and again, forgive me if I'm wrong on this, I see a change in the last 12 months. I'm speaking to a lot of people out there where the focus now is on pathways, is on grassroots. It's almost they've ticked the box now of doing these sporting events. It's about finding the stars of tomorrow from this region. The focus now from a lot of stakeholders is on finding young talent who can go and perhaps one day represent the UAE on the biggest stage. And that is why Sports Zone and your facilities that you're building will be so vitally important, not only in the short term, but more so in the long term.
Yeah, and I've definitely seen a big change in the last couple of years in terms of pathways. They definitely are, you know, focusing on long-term development programs. There's a lot more companies out here doing that. And until they do get those pathways right, then you're not going to get that excellent at the top end. And Dubai, I mean, I don't think you'll get a better sports staging zone in the world in terms of the sports they have here over that period.
Facilities as well.
And the facilities are outstanding. But I do believe that it's very difficult for young families, for families traveling around Dubai, you know, work gets involved, to take them to different locations. And I think if you can centralize that, and you could have a young lad that, you know, loves rugby, but he might turn to hockey or, he might play football. And he goes, oh, you know, see the rugby guys train, I'll have a go at that. And I think it's important that kids do play other sports as well. So creating that almost like the old Dubai Country Club feel where, you know, everything was centralized. You had the cricket there, you had the hockey, you had, you know, and it's literally just down the road, really. So
how do you view the other facilities around not only this emirate and this city of Dubai, up in Abu Dhabi? And we've had a lot of texts coming in. In fact, one gentleman or she, a lot of the clubs struggle, and this is going back to the rugby aspect, a lot of the clubs struggle for funds, especially the ones outside of Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Here in the RAC Goats, I think they're the second tier below you guys from the Premiership, correct?
Yeah, they're playing the Community League.
Community League, pointing out there that they went through tough times to get enough talent out of the other Emirates to play. So how important is it, in actual fact, that this facility promotes just sport as well, getting people involved so that there is enough of a talent pool so that teams like the Rat Goats, who are down the road, I appreciate an hour down the road in Rasul Khaimah, that they've got then the option to actually come in and plunder some of these talents that perhaps, okay, maybe not good enough to play Premiership rugby, but good enough and want to just enjoy the rugby. That, I guess, is another aspect of what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, we are doing stuff down in Rasul Khaimah. We have been, you know, we have been in talks and we have done some stuff with the Goats. We were down there at their end of year dinner last year. We brought David James out for that. So that was a very good evening.
I bet you
was. Yeah, that was a very good evening. Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, Mike touched on it earlier. Location, location, location. Yeah. I mean, you know, for them to get enough players down in Rasul Khaimah, it's very difficult because obviously it's not a local game. It's not a game that, you know, is played by the masses across the Northern Emirate. And also facility, where do they play? So they are playing, you know, on a sand pitch there down by I forgot the name of the hotel, but they've got a sand pitch there. But what we're trying to do is get something going in Rasul Khaimah where, you know, they do have a facility to go and play, you know, to go and play rugby.
Yeah.
It's just taking time, you know, and we have been talking to them and, you know, we're trying to help. And that's what we're trying to do with all the sports and with all the clubs here, if we can help.
And coming back to you, Mike, on this, in terms of anyone that's listening, and you mentioned there that now, I'm sure you're already an attractive proposition. You're even more so now for anyone that's moving into this part of the world who loves their rugby. Because let's be frank, there are a number of options. There are other teams out there as well that I'll do just as much as you guys are doing and want to offer them something, an environment, a nice environment with which to come and play. But moving to this new home, the Sharks are now that much more of an attractive proposition. So anyone that's listening this afternoon, are you open to trials? If there's anyone out there that loves their rugby, you'd welcome them with open arms?
No doubt. Yes, without doubt, it's that goes without saying, Chris. It'd be we're anyone that wants to come along play any standard rugby. They're quite welcome to come and join us.
How many teams do you guys have? You have your elite team. Do you have a second team as well?
Yes, we do. Yes, okay. We've got two teams.
You've got two teams. So the depth of quality, and you're happy with it, Matt. The quality that you've got, you've retained most of your talent for the new season.
Yeah, we've retained quite a few of the guys from last season. I think last season, you know, was difficult. You know, we didn't get the results in the pitch that we wanted, but we've retained a lot of those guys, which means we've retained the core and the essence of what the club stands for. And we've already recruited a couple of new guys in. So overall, we're looking pretty good. So yeah, if anybody wants to come down, we're open. There's two levels of rugby. We're open to anybody that comes down. And we're going to be Mondays and Wednesdays at Dubai Sports World at the Rhino Tech, which G-Smeg has set up. So please, yeah, come down, 7:30.
And you're down there until when? End of August?
We're down there until roughly the end of August. At the moment, as Greg mentioned, we're busy laying the pitches and getting all of that sorted out. So that's, you know, time-dependent construction timelines.
Of course.
So until then, we are training indoors, doing the conditioning, getting everybody ready for the season. And then we'll move outdoors as soon as we're ready.
Not to press you, Greg. Sorry, Arch. I was going to say not to press you, Greg, but Matt has said there, time constraints, obviously getting the pitches lead. Have you got a time in your mind?
Trying to get it ready for October.
Nice.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So and that'll ready. Be in the season starts October?
Season starts mid-September.
Okay.
So we'll be a couple of weeks shy of it. A
couple of weeks, and then we're ready to rock and roll.
Ready to go.
I was just going to say to Matt, are you in the market for a Scottish lock that doesn't like contact and can't catch a ball?
Oh, we've got a couple of those.
Oh, jeepers.
He'll be fighting for a place.
Can he wear his goalkeeping gloves, jumping four on the line out?
If he's going to wear goalkeeping
gloves, he'll fit in perfectly.
Trust me, Mark Archer, you have not seen me on the rugby field. Let me tell you, you can see, I don't do much sport other than sticking goals, and that's because I stay away from the ball when I'm in bins as well. But listen, gents, I'm conscious of time here. Anyone that's listening, Mike, that does think, you know what, I want to head on down, and I want to check out what the Sharks are up to. What's the best way to contact you guys and to keep abreast of what you guys are doing?
Get on our website, go to our Facebook page, we're on Twitter and Instagram, and all our contact details are on there for both myself and Matt, so please, by all means, just give us a call, send us a message and we'll get back to you, everybody.
I'm not going to put too much pressure on you, Matt. Well, in fact, I am. What's your goal for the season?
Goal for the new season?
I appreciate we're a couple of months away, but...
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, we didn't finish where we wanted to on the table last year, so we want to get up the table there. I think at a minimum is win the bottom of the league this year. And then going forward, our aspirations are to, you know, looking to see if we can get up a league. So that's really where we want to go. And obviously with the support and everything I spoke about earlier, that's looking pretty realistic.
Okay, that's good. And I guess final word to you then, Greg, as well. Anyone that's listening tonight and thinks, you know what, I want to pop down. I want to see what Maidan are doing. The Sports Zone is open for business. I'm right in saying that. What's the best way for those guys to get in touch?
You contact us on Sports Zone on Facebook. We haven't got the webpage ready for the actual sports zone yet, but please come on down. It's a fun atmosphere. We've got great community prices down there. And we're seriously sports, seriously social.
I should point out as well, I think it is worth me pointing out, that that is separate. You don't need to be a rugby individual to be interested or to get involved in the sports zone, do you?
No, no. You can come down and join as a single or family member, part of the sports zone club. And then if you want to partake in any of the sporting facilities or in any of the teams or groups, you just contact those groups directly.
Absolutely.
Down there. Well, and all that information will be down there.
It's exciting times. It really is. Another facility like that, much needed. And of course, at the heart of it, it is grassroots and pathways. We need more of that, undoubtedly, in the UE. Bless you, boys. Thank you so much for popping in. Very best
Thank
of
you.
Luck for the new season, Matt and Mike. I'm sure you guys will smash it. Brand new home as well. Best of luck as well, Greg. I know you've got an awful lot of plates spinning at this moment in time, but best of luck with it down
Thank
at Maidan.
Much.
And we will be hard hats on coming down, Robbie and I, for a little tour in the next couple of weeks as
great
well.
Great to see you guys down there.
Great
always,
stuff.
Always welcome.
Thank Top you. Stuff. Thanks, guys. Yes. That is the boys from Dubai Sharks, Greg Holmes as well. You are listening to The Grill. A little late with the 5 o'clock news headlines, but then I'm always late. You know me by now. When we come back, we'll put you bang in the picture of what is going on from a live sporting perspective. Sean O'Shea has got a stream. He's watching Arsenal against PSG. All of that and much more to come when we come back.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.